from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
We do welcome you in. It's time for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly with you till 8 o'clock this evening. We got a lot to get into on the program today. As always, if you want to chime in, you can do so by calling, texting, tweeting, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's the phone number for you to call and the phone number for you to text. You can also tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Here's what's coming up. We've got a really, really busy show. Really busy show today. And the Cardinals made some announcements today that I want to get into. And I want to give you the opportunity to chime in on it as well. So, the rundown of the show, about to give you my thoughts on what happened today. The next segment, so after we take this next break, we'll give you an opportunity to share your thoughts if anybody out there wants to. We'll step away from baseball for a little bit. Today is the opening day of the NBA season. We don't talk a lot of NBA basketball on here, but with it being opening day, I want to get into that later on in the hour. We'll play some audio from Drew Bannister, the Blues head coach, as the Blues are in action tonight. Next hour, we'll open it up talking more about the Cardinals' moves today. We will hear comments made by President of Baseball Operations John Mozeliak. He spoke with us via a Zoom session today, and I'm going to play back a lot of what he had to say about the moves. We've got our weekly conversation with Patrick Mahomes coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. All right, so if you have not been around to see the news of the day, the first announcement, the Cardinals sent out two big press releases today. The first announcement that was made was that the Cardinals have hired Robert Cerfolio as their new assistant general manager for player development and performance. He comes in from the Cleveland Guardians, where he most recently was their director of player development, but had really climbed the ladder there. He started as a baseball operations and player development intern in 2015, and he slowly made his way up to being the director of player development. We all know what the Cleveland Guardians do, how great they are at developing players, how great they are at drafting players, how great they are at high-level major league success, even without the big payroll. There's going to be a little bit more money to be spent in St. Louis as compared to Cleveland, and now he comes in, and he's going to be a huge part of this player development reset that the Cardinals have going under Heim Bloom. So that was the first news of the day. Second news of the day was the confirmation of what we talked about yesterday. John Jay is being brought back to the organization. He is going to work on the coaching staff. Willie McGee is being transitioned to a special assistant to President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. And the Cardinals have hired Brant Brown as the new hitting coach. Now, a lot of people, when they heard that last bit, Brant Brown, who's Brant Brown? Maybe you'll remember him a little bit from playing days. Brant Brown, who's that? Well, I kind of had to chuckle a little bit today when I was watching the reaction on social media. We're in like Cardinals fans, many of them, not all of them, but many Cardinals fans right now are just in this like wacky land where anything the team does, you're not going to find a positive in it because it's connected to John Mozeliak and it's connected to what people who have been making decisions are continuing to make decisions. So I saw the reaction to the Brant Brown hiring, because part of the background on Brown is he last year took on a job with the Seattle Mariners, where he was there. They called him the offensive coordinator, which isn't really a baseball term, but they created that position for him. And he was also the bench coach, and his job entailed using in-game analytics and getting into like the mental side of the game while also doing some actual coaching and then being the bench coach. Like, it was a really weird thing because the Mariners do weird things. And it was a really weird thing. And then because the Mariners didn't have very good offensive players and they weren't performing at a high level, he became the immediate fall guy. So the first reaction to this is, oh, the Cardinals are hiring a guy who couldn't even last a full season in Seattle. Okay. Well, take a step back a little bit. And the year before, he was with the Miami Marlins working for Skip Schumacher. and did a really good job there. And because of the job he did there, he got the opportunity in Seattle. Probably in hindsight, wasn't the best decision to take that job in Seattle. Kind of a weird thing again, but he did a really good job in Miami. Before he was in Miami, he was working for the Dodgers as their assistant hitting coach. Did a really good job there. He's tight with Skip Schumacher. In fact, John Mozeliak said today that Schumacher gave him a glowing endorsement, and sounds like that was part of the decision. So here's where I think it's kind of funny, and Kevin Wheeler and I talked about this a bit during 515 Sports. There is such a negative feeling right now towards anything that John Mozeliak does that people can't take a step back. Some people, not all people. If you listen to this show, it's probably not talking about you because you're a very smart person. You choose to listen to this program. But there are people out there who cannot take a step back and really evaluate things. And I think this is a wonderful example of this, because the same people who are angry that the Cardinals hired Brant Brown are the same people who are always telling me on social media that the Cardinals need to fire Oliver Marmol and hire Skip Schumacher. And I have nothing against Skip Schumacher. I think he's really, really good manager. But I think he and Oliver Marmol are very, very similar. I think they are incredibly similar. If they were to manage the same teams, I think most of the same moves are being made. I think the two guys are very, very similar in their baseball beliefs and the way they do things and everything. So where I chuckle about all this is there's a group of people out there that don't want Oliver Marmol, that do want Skip Schumacher. They are the same people complaining that Brant Brown got hired today, even though they really don't know anything about Brant Brown, because none of us know anything about Brant Brown. And Skip Schumacher loves Brant Brown. And if Skip Schumacher was the Cardinals manager, there's a very good chance that he would be bringing Brant Brown in to be the Cardinals hitting coach. So if Brant Brown is the hitting coach for Skip Schumacher, everybody's happy. If Brant Brown's the hitting coach for Oliver Marmol, nobody's happy. Nobody's a little bit too strong of a word here, but you get what I'm trying to say. So I think it's a little bit short-sighted to look at just what happened in Seattle, where he got put into the square peg round hole type situation, doing a bunch of stuff, and look at the success he had as the hitting coach with the Marlins. Look at the success that he had as the assistant hitting coach with the Dodgers, and know that's going to be something a little bit different. Most times, hitting coaches become scapegoats for teams that don't perform offensively because the players don't perform. Hitting coaches, their impact can be, not that it's minimal, but I don't think it's that much different from one hitting coach to the next. If you're a major league hitting coach, you got that job for a reason and you're good at what you do. Turner Ward was a good hitting coach. Jeff Albert was a good hitting coach. Like, all these guys were good hitting coaches. Sometimes they don't completely fit in the organization. Sometimes things go wrong. I'm not saying Turner Ward shouldn't have been fired. I was fine with that. The team did not perform offensively, and there were some really startling numbers about what the team did this past year offensively. Hitting with runners in scoring position, taking way too many strikes, things like that, which we've talked about a lot. But I get frustrated when people who don't know anything about Brant Brown outside of the fact that he did not get much of an opportunity in Seattle after being hired there are upset. And to me, it's more of a case of people are so upset with the organization and the people making the decisions that if you are brought in under the current regime, well, then nobody's got time for you just because of who made the decision. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know much about Brant Brown. I don't know a thing about Brant Brown. I know his resume. I know what John Mozeliak told us today on the press conference. Outside of that, don't know a thing. I'm not alone in that. All right, I'll take your thoughts on it. If you want to call, text, or tweet, we will gladly take those phone calls, those text messages, and those tweets. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. What are your thoughts on the Brant Brown hiring, the Rob Serfolio hiring, all that? We'll give you an opportunity to chime in after this break right here on KMOX. We're back at it on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. The conversation that we're having right now, the Cardinals announcements today. Brant Brown is the team's new hitting coach. John Jay joining the coaching staff. Willie McGee transitions to a special assistant to President of Baseball Operations John Mozeliak. And Rob Serfolio has been hired as an assistant general manager for player development and performance. If you have thoughts on any of these things, love to hear from you. You can call, you can text, you can tweet. The phone number, 314-436-7900. That's 314-436-7900 to call or text. Or you can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. Giving you an opportunity to chime in because social media has certainly reacted to the news of the day. Text message from the 314 says, "We asked for Big Mac or Holiday or Edmonds as hitting coach and Chris Carpenter as pitching coach." All right, so let's remove Mark McGwire from the contents of this text message, because McGwire has a track record as a major league hitting coach and was a really good hitting coach. Really good. Really good. He has shown no inclination to jump back into that grind. It's not going to happen. If you can get him back, sure, that'd be great, but that's probably not going to happen. But let's go through these other names. This is one of these things that gets at me a little bit, and I shouldn't react emotionally. I don't understand why people think because you are a good player, you're going to be a good coach. Because if anything, who was one of the worst hitting coaches in the last 20 years in Major League Baseball? It was Barry Bonds. He was terrible. He was one of the worst hitting coaches you're ever going to see. He is the best hitter of my generation, and he was a horrible, horrible hitting coach. He wasn't locked into the job. He was just such a natural. He did it all so naturally, and I know the jokes present themselves right there when I say naturally, and he maybe put a few unnatural things into his body, but you know where I'm going. You know where I'm going on this. I get frustrated. I get so frustrated when Adam Wainwright retires 2 years ago. He's got to be the next pitching coach. Yadier Molina retires. He's got to be the next manager for two things. A, we don't know if any of these guys are good coaches. Now, Holiday has obviously, he's worked with his brother at Oklahoma State a little bit, and his kids are very good hitters. So you would think that Holiday probably would do a nice job. But even when he joined the staff for a little while, he didn't join the staff as a hitting coach. He joined the staff to be a bench coach. There are people out there who devote their lives to coaching the game of baseball, who study the art of coaching, who are riding buses between Beloit, Wisconsin and Midland, Michigan, going for all night long, working in the minor leagues, doing all these things, who are really, really good coaches. And then there's like this belief out there that, oh, because this guy performed well at the big league level, they're going to just be good coaches right away. So that it frustrates me because I see so many people in the baseball industry working really, really hard. And for some reasons, like you don't have to believe what I say. You're listening to me. I appreciate you listening to me. Hopefully, if you listen to me every day, you believe some of what I said. I'm telling you, just because somebody is good at what they do from a playing standpoint doesn't mean that they are good at what they do from a coaching standpoint. I would ask somebody to call right now. 314-436-7900. Call right now and tell me why Jim Edmonds is a better hitting coach than Brant Brown. I'm not going to get the call. And if I get the call, it's going to be a bunch of nonsense. Like, there's nothing that you can say. Like, people can't evaluate coaches, especially hitting coaches. I think pitching coaches can be evaluated a little bit more than hitting coaches. Please, keep this in the back of your minds. I know like there's this affection towards players and wanting to keep them around. And hey, Cardinals are as good as any team in baseball at getting former John Jay's back, right? Some people are excited about John Jay. So the Cardinals are doing that. But yeah, the idea that these former Cardinals could come in, and because you know their name, they're automatically better than Brent Brown as a hitting coach. It is a very, very, very flawed take. Chuck has given us a call. Hey, Chuck, you are on a Graybar Sports Open Line.
I heard what you just said. I did like the John Jay hiring. I thought there was a whole lot more people qualified to get the hitting coach. I don't
like
know
who?
Much about Brent Brown.
Chuck, name. Give me a name. Give me one name. You just told me there's a lot of people more qualified for the hitting coach job. If you have that belief, give me a name and why they're more qualified.
I was hoping Holiday would come back, but a year from now, is there any way you think Bloom will hire Yachty?
I don't, probably not. I don't know. What, for what job?
So should I stop dreaming about him coming and saving the day? Is that unrealistic?
I don't think he has the interest in it right now. Are you talking about to be the club's manager, or are you talking about something else?
To be the club manager a year from now.
Yeah, if they make a change at the managerial position, would Yadier Molina be interested in the job? Possibly. I don't know. He'd have to show commitment to doing it. He had, and Chuck, I appreciate the phone call. He had an opportunity this past year to be very involved in the organization. He really wasn't. I don't know all the details behind it. Anytime it was asked about, it was, hey, you know what? There's stuff going on in his home life. Yeah, it was a very... This year was weird because the goalpost moved a couple times on a couple different things. We've talked about like the Tommy Edman thing where we get to spring training and the report is, well, Edman probably won't be available for the start of Grapefruit League games, but he'll be playing a few days later. And then Grapefruit League games get underway. Well, it's going to be a little bit longer, and then we're deep into spring training. He's probably not going to be ready before the end of spring training. Then we get into the season. Yeah, he's going to miss the start of the season, but he should be there pretty soon. Then we're told, he's not going to go on the 60-day injured list. He'll be fine before that. Then he goes on the 60-day injured list. And there was just goalposts kept getting moved. Same thing with Yadier Molina. We get to spring training, we're thinking he's going to be there right out of the bat, and he's not. And we're told, well, you know what, he's probably going to show up around the time that the minor leaguers show up. And he's going to be working with a lot of the young guys anyway, so good opportunity. Minor leaguers show up, he's not there. Then we're getting towards the end of spring training, where's Yachty? He's not going to make it for spring training, but he'll be around. You know, he needed a little bit of rest here after he was managing in the Caribbean World Series or whatever it was. And then we get into the season, and well, then it turns into, well, there's stuff going on at home, and it just kind of ends. And I don't know the details behind it. It was weird. It was weird, but we never really understood completely what was going on there. Look, at some point, Matt Holliday is going to want to jump into a major league coaching staff. And once that moment comes, I hope the Cardinals have a spot for him. Because I think Matt Holliday has the opportunity to be a really good coach. Really good coach. Maybe a major league manager one day. I think he's got that. But he's made the decision that he wants to be around his family. He did not retire from playing all that long ago. He's got kids that he wants to be able to watch and support. And he's doing that. So he and Oliver Marmol are very close. That's the narrative that he didn't join the coaching staff because of some sort of rift with Marmol is the furthest thing from the truth. Those guys are very, very close. They're tight. Their families are tight. Like everything, they're very close. Holiday just realized that he wasn't ready to commit to the schedule that goes along with being a major league coach. So at some point in time, Matt Holliday wants to join a coaching staff. That'd be great. I think it's going to happen at some point. But right now, he's putting family first, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we're actually going to switch gears. We don't talk a lot of NBA on this show, obviously so. We don't have an NBA team in St. Louis, but still a lot of attention on the NBA. And tonight is opening night in the NBA, so we'll talk a little bit about it. We'll do that coming up in just a moment. We'll jump back into Cardinals talk next hour, and we'll get into the Blues. We'll hear from Drew Bannister as they're going to play tonight. We'll do that later on this hour. Jam-packed Graybar Sports Open Line right here. Right here. on KMOX. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We're going to talk some basketball here in just a moment. And just a programming note for you. Of course, we are the home of SLU Billikens basketball. They've got their second and final exhibition game coming up on Friday. They're going to take on Maryville, and we will have that broadcast for you here on KMOX. We did not play their first exhibition, and then they open up the season on Monday, November 4th against Santa Clara, a game being played in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Tonight is opening night in the NBA. With a couple interesting games. Knicks and Celtics play in Boston. Celtics are considered the favorite for the NBA title this year. And then the Timberwolves and Lakers are the second game before most of the rest of the NBA will be underway over the next few nights. One of our favorite people to be able to talk a lot of things with, including basketball, is Justin Garcia. You follow him on Twitter at Justin Garcia NBA. Works as the analyst for the Milwaukee Bucks Radio Network. Does a lot of other things as well. He joins us right now. Justin, always great to talk with you. How are you?
Good, Matt. We're talking basketball. I thought you had me on to talk about Philip Roberg.
We'll talk a little hockey here in just a moment. Don't worry. I never have you on without mentioning the Blues, so we'll certainly get to that. And Jake Neighbor signed a two-year deal today,
yeah.
So we got a few things to touch on. But before we get to that, this NBA season, I mentioned, you know, Boston is the favorite to win it, but I don't know. I look at the NBA this year, and I look at a lot of teams that are pretty darn good. I feel like it's a wide-open race. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I agree. It's as wide open as I can remember it being. I mean, you have to talk, since Jordan retired, and even then you had Hakeem Olajuwon and the Rockets and some young teams really coming up. But they've really kind of leveled the playing field where you have a number of teams that feel like they have a really good chance to win the championship. Certainly the Celtics you would point to. Everybody loves the Thunder. But I think in the West especially, it is wide open where you could point to four or five teams that probably have equal odds or at least feel just as confident.
I mean, Boston, Oklahoma City, that there's some love for the Knicks, some love for the 76ers. That might be a stretch. Timberwolves, Nuggets coming out of the West, even a team like Dallas, the Bucks that you're attached to with Giannis, obviously they're going to always be in there. I mean, it feels like you can even go past that. Like it just if everything falls right for one of these teams or they make the correct in-season acquisition, you can see a path for so many different teams.
Yeah, and I know that's what the league wanted. I think, and this isn't just speaking as someone whose team was impacted by this, I think they may have gone a little far with some of the restrictions we've seen with the salary cap and really trying to thwart teams from building those mega teams that we've seen in the past. Now, you say that, but you have the same offseason where we mentioned that the New York Knicks acquire Karl-Anthony Towns and Mikal Bridges, and we've seen more player movement. But the main thing is, like, when you think back to those Golden State Warriors, and I know they didn't win anything, but on paper, that Brooklyn Nets team, we're not going to see that again, at least under this CBA, with that type of grouping of superstars all on one team. You have more talent spread out evenly, and that's really brought the fact that all these teams feel like they have a chance to win. The Eastern Conference is, on paper at least, as good as it has been in decades, where you have, you know, six teams that I think realistically think, look, if things go our way, we could push the Celtics and we could win the Eastern Conference.
Is it an unfortunate thing that maybe the biggest storyline right now is the LeBron James, Bronny James situation in Los Angeles for a Lakers team that honestly doesn't look that great? I don't feel like they're going to be sitting there contending for an NBA title. There's so many great teams and so many great stories, yet maybe it's a lazy narrative, but the narrative keeps going back to what's happening in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I mean, I get the fatigue with the story, and it remains to be seen how much time Bronny James is actually going to see at the NBA level. I mean, the Lakers haven't come out and said it, but I would assume most of his time is going to be spent in the G League. We had the Lakers in Milwaukee for one of our preseason games, and you can see there's still a lot of work to be done with Bronny, but just the fact that you have a player that is able to play in an NBA game with his son, I would assume we're going to see that tonight, that J.J. Redick's going to put them on the floor together, and then you'll probably see Bronny getting a majority of his time in the G League. But to have a guy that's still at the level that LeBron James is and have a son that is in the league, regardless of how deserving he was of that spot where he was selected, that's the special part, because you got to go back to the Griffies playing together, and we're going on, what, 30-plus years with that.
We're talking with Justin Garcia. Past Boston, and you've already talked about Oklahoma City and that group that they put together. I mean, 2 years ago, when nobody knew who Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was, and he's come on to be one of the top players in the NBA. The way they've put that team together, they're stars, but it's not like you've got all these household names. But when you look at that group and you look at that team, my goodness, they are so good.
Yeah, and I, you know, kind of talked about the CBA and where we're headed, and it's going to prevent teams from building these super teams. And more than that, I think it's really going to shorten the window for every team. That even Boston, like, they're the favorites to win the championship. They were clearly the best team last year, but the questions are going to be there towards the end of this season if they fall short, certainly. But next year, they're going to face some serious challenges with the way that the roster is constructed and the money that's out there. So the big piece of the CBA is, I think it's shortening your window, where realistically you probably have 3 years, maybe four at the absolute most, to keep a group together and contend, because you're going to have to start to pay everybody. The Thunder are the one team that might be able to prolong that, just because they have all these young guys and they have a treasure trove of draft picks yet that they can still make moves. Or, as we've seen Sam Presti do, say, well, rather than trading these picks, I'm just going to use them and continue to develop guys. And when players leave, we have new guys coming in.
What's the team that if you're sitting at home and just about everybody's playing and you're flipping through the games on League Pass or whatever, that if they're playing and the Bucks are not that night, so you've got the night off, what's the team that you most enjoy watching?
Oh, well, the Thunder were up there last year. The Timberwolves were up there last year. And I think they're going to be even more fun to watch this year, because I know it's a big piece to lose Karl Anthony Towns. Dante DiVincenzo, we got a chance to see quite a bit in Milwaukee. He's going to be very good for them. And I think Julius Randle is going to provide most of what Karl Anthony Towns did. And you get to watch Anthony Edwards ascend into a level where he may be in the MVP discussion. Some of the young teams, too, I mean, I think it's the majority of people would point to the San Antonio Spurs and watching Victor Wembanyama. The problem with that is there's just not a whole lot of talent on that team. I know you brought in Chris Paul. That's pretty much it. I still think they're a mid-30s wins team at best. So a lot of the Western Conference teams, and the Phoenix Suns too, because I think they're going to be very good. Mike Budenholzer, we witnessed it here in Milwaukee. He knows how to lift the floor of teams. He is a very good regular season coach. And that team last year did not shoot a lot of threes. Wherever Bud goes, you shoot threes. I remember our first preseason game with Bud as the head coach. I think the Bucks took 50-plus threes in that game, and we all looked at each other like, is this what the offense is going to be? And look, he had Giannis win two MVPs under him. This Suns roster is probably the most talented group he's ever had, so I think they're going to be a very fun team to watch.
All right, let's talk a little Blues hockey before we get you out of here, which I've had people like question sometimes when I've had you on, like, why did you start asking the basketball guy all these hockey questions? You are a legit big Blues fan. That's your team. You actually got to see them in person this year because the Blues played an exhibition game at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee. They've won four of their first six. They're back in action tonight. Some of the pieces that they brought in the offseason, doing a nice job. They gave Jake Neighbors a contract extension today. What are your overall thoughts right now on the way the Blues have started their season?
Overall, very pleased. It was kind of a coming into the season before the offer sheet fiasco. You were still kind of like, well, still feels like it's going to be a year or two away of up and down play and not really pushing for the postseason. But that at least sparked interest. They have a lot of nice pieces. Didn't really know what to expect from Dylan Holloway. I was always very high on Philip Roberg and thought he was going to make an impact, if for no other reason than they don't have a lot of help on the back line defensively. And I've been blown away by what Philip Roberg has been able to do so far this season. I just feel like it's a young enough group with pieces that are veteran enough that if they can keep playing like this and find that spark at the midpoint of the season, I think they're going to be very interesting to watch, especially with Jordan Binnington in the net. And I know it's been up and down early so far, But I think we've seen enough of the sample size from Benny to know what to realistically expect from him. So I still think this is going to be a playoff team, certainly not in the top three in their division, but I think they're going to be a playoff team by the end of the year.
Did you like the Neighbors 2-year extension?
Well, I was just having this conversation with one of the maybe two or three other hockey fans that I have in my life here in Milwaukee, and saying, you know, I every year I look at the Bucks schedule to try to see when is there a gap where I can get to St. Louis to take in a game. I don't know if we actually have one this year, so that's why the preseason game, seeing it in Milwaukee, was big. But also saying, look, I got to figure out, who am I going to buy a jersey of, a sweater of for this team? Because I think we've talked about this, Matt. My all-time favorite player will forever be Chris Pronger. I tried to get down there for the special Pronger night a couple of years ago, but we had a Bucks game. And I used to have a Chris Pronger jersey for years through college and after that. And now it's time to replace that and find somebody else. And I think Jake Neighbors is the guy.
Okay. That's those are strong words coming from Justin Garcia. Justin, we appreciate you taking some time. We will check back in with you throughout the course of the NBA season and the Blues season, for that matter, if you're all right with that.
All right. Sounds good, Matt.
All right. Very good. Justin Garcia, at Justin Garcia NBA on social media, tweets about the NBA, but also tweets about the Blues and other things. So check him out for sure. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll hear a little from Drew Bannister as the Blues do get set to wrap up their four-game homestand this evening. They are in action. They are going to get started in about 12 minutes against the Winnipeg Jets, and we'll get some pregame audio leading into that coming up in just a moment right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program. Wanted to preview the Blues game tonight for just a few moments. They are going to have a puck drop at 7 o'clock at the Enterprise Center. They are in action this evening against the Winnipeg Jets, trying to hand Winnipeg their first loss of the season. Alexander Texier back in the lineup for the Blues this evening. Drew Bannister spoke with the media earlier today, and with Texier coming back from injury, Bannister talked a little bit about how they are going to use him.
And I think we want to kind of ease him in here a little bit early on. He's been out for a little bit with that injury. But previous to that, you know, I thought he had an outstanding training camp, but he can play in a lot of different roles and a lot of different situations.
What does he bring? When you watched him during camp, what does he
bring? I was impressed with his ability to protect pucks and hold on to them, his strength, the way he skates, and certainly he can shoot a puck. You know, something, you know, we want to play faster, we want to be harder on pucks. You know, he sees the ice well, he makes good plays, so I think he has...
It's a great time to build a Fisher and Fritchell...
plays, but also finish plays.
So that was Drew Bannister speaking with the media just a little while ago, or earlier today, I should say. When talking about this matchup tonight, they are going to take on the Winnipeg Jets. And the Jets have played five games, and the Jets have five victories this year. And Bannister talked about his opposition and the challenge that goes along with that.
I think their record speaks for itself, you know, tonight for us. I mean, obviously being a divisional game, it's important. The last game at home before we go on the road, make sure that we finish here strong. You know, so, I mean, you know, they play good hockey. That's where they're at. And, you know, we got to continue to build our game. And it's going to be a good test for us here tonight against them.
So that's Drew Bannister speaking earlier today. Blues and Jets tonight over at the Enterprise Center. In the second hour of the show, we're going to hear a lot more from John Mozeliak. He spoke with the media today, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations, on the various announcements that the team made. I'll continue to give you my thoughts on those moves coming up after the 7 o'clock news. We also have our weekly conversation with Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. That's going to be coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We do roll on here on KMOX this hour, busy hour. We're going to hear a lot from John Mozeliak in our next segment. He spoke with the media earlier today, went through his thoughts on why the Cardinals made the decisions that they made with the various hires, bringing in Rob Serfolio as the new assistant general manager for player development and performance, in addition to the coaching staff changes. Brant Brown is the new hitting coach. John Jay joining the coaching staff, and Willie McGee is going to transition to a special assistant role moving forward, so he won't have the grind of being part of the everyday coaching staff anymore. And indications are that was something that he was looking for more than anything else. And the guy's 65 years old and has just been grinding. So in our next segment, we'll go through just about everything that John Mozeliak had to say today. Talked earlier about Brant Brown, and I pushed back a little bit on people being upset about his hire. I don't think we know all that much about him at this point. But a couple things jumped out at me. And again, we'll play the actual audio for you in the next segment. But as I was listening to John Mozeliak talk today, a couple things that he said really, really did kind of make an impact. He referred to Brant Brown being kind of a hybrid in between a Jeff Albert and a Turner Ward. A Jeff Albert was very, very kind of new age baseball driven, and a Turner Ward was much more old school in the way he did things. And according to Mo, Brown is going to really bring those things together. He also said, and I alluded to this earlier, they did talk with Skip Schumacher. Because Brown was worked for Schumacher a couple years ago in Schumacher's first year with the Marlins, and Brown and Schumacher continued to be very close from all indications, and Schumacher reportedly gave the Cardinals a ringing endorsement of Brant Brown and bringing him into the organization. So that's one person that is very much in favor of him coming in. So that there's something to be said for that. And again, he did a really nice job with the Marlins, and that helped lead to his role with the Mariners, which did not go as well for him, and he was not able to even finish his only season there. He was kind of the scapegoat in the early going for what was just a terrible offensive season for Seattle. So that stuck out to me. One of the other things he said, and you'll hear it from Mo in a moment, but he talked about Brown's ability to kind of cater the message for different type of hitters. And the question that Mo got was in relation to Brown's ability to work with young hitters and how important that was, especially because of the trajectory that the Cardinals seem to be on, and more on that in a moment, but the trajectory that they seem to be on in just having a lot of young guys on the roster. And Mo took that really one step further, and he talked about Brown's ability to cater the message for different types of players. So yes, Mo made it very clear. Brown's ability to connect with younger players is something that's very, very important for him in his hiring. But different players want information in different kinds of ways. And there has never been more information out there. And when I talk to really, really, really smart baseball people, especially the people who are like the holders of the information, very often coaches, one of the things that they have to do, which I think is challenging, is they have to discern what information means something and should be shared and what information shouldn't be, that it doesn't really hold much value. That's only going to send you in a wrong direction. So discerning information has become a very important part of coaching baseball. And I know there's some people don't want to hear that, but it has been. There's a lot of information out there, and knowing what information to use and what information not to use is an incredibly important part of what's going on. And Mozeliak was impressed by the fact that Brown evidently has a very good ability to, and it's not just this overwhelming, this information's good and this information's not, but from a hitter to hitter. Well, this this hitter is going to react to this information and respond to this, where if I give this to somebody else, you know what, it's just going to be too much for him. We need to keep it a little bit more simple for him. And knowing those different things and being able to just recognize the best way to approach every single individual hitter, and that's good to hear. That's really good to hear. I think teams try to allow players to be the best version of themselves, but sometimes teams get in their own way with their own philosophies and hitters kind of, you know, whatever bias there might be or tendencies that a coach might have. So somebody who can evaluate a hitter and know what they need to be taught, how they need to be taught, is an important thing. Last thing for you on this, and again, you'll hear it from Mo's mouth in our next segment. We've talked a lot about what the reduction of payroll is going to look like for this team. And there's two paths that they can go down. Path number one is Paul Goldschmidt's not coming back. Lance Lynn's not coming back. Kyle Gibson's not coming back. You're replacing all of those guys with in-house candidates, and they're all cost-controlled players. So your payroll is dropping fairly significantly just because of players who are not being brought back. That's one avenue of reducing payroll. The second avenue of reducing payroll is doing all of that, but then trading away contracts, trading away a Wilson Contreras and or a Sonny Gray and or a Nolan Arenado and or a Miles Michaelis. All of a sudden, those guys are not on the team anymore. And especially with the first three that I mentioned, Contreras, Arenado, Gray, if those guys are gone, the team takes a step back potentially. Those are guys who are, and nothing against Miles Michaelis, maybe he has a bounce back season, but he's got back-to-back years now of really, really, really struggling. So, listening to Mo talk today, and I think it was John Denton from MLB.com asked him, do you have more of an update on what it's going to look like from a payroll standpoint? Because at that press conference a few weeks ago, they kind of said, well, we'll know more as the offseason moves on, as we get more of an idea on the different revenues that are coming in. And I think that's probably connected to the TV situation, which is still up in the air, and also sports gambling, which could be legalized here. The vote could be in place for it to be legalized, and then that would get on the path to legalization here in the short term. But even if those things happen, even if the Cardinals stay on Bally, which will be FanDuel now, it's FanDuel Sports Network, that's what it's called now. Even if they stay on there and they get to make the money that they were set to make this year, which is unlikely, even if sports gambling is legalized, so there is a path forward for more revenue sources, I still think that there's obviously going to be a reduction in payroll. And listening to Mo talk today, all he would really say is they are preparing for more younger players to get expanded opportunities. And for me, I've been kind of on the fence on what I thought it was going to look like, which one of those two options it was going to be. Listening to him today really makes me feel like they're going to look to get out from some of those contracts, that the payroll reduction might be the more extreme version of the two different paths. Does that mean they trade all those guys? Does that mean Nolan Arenado, Sonny Gray, Wilson Contreras, Miles Michaelis, none of those guys are on the team next year? Probably not. I have a hard time believing all those contracts would be shed, but I think that they are going to work to get out from some of those contracts, and that's where it's going to be more of an opportunity for younger players. All right, all those comments from John Mozeliak. Again, he spent a good amount of time with us today in a Zoom media conference, and we'll play much of what he had to say. We'll do that in just a moment here on KMOX. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Welcome back into the program. We've spent a lot of today talking through the moves that the Cardinals announced today. From a coaching standpoint, John Jay rejoins the organization as a coach. Brant Brown has been hired as the new hitting coach. Willie McGee is going to serve as a special assistant for the organization. And Rob Serfolio, from a front office standpoint, has been hired as the new assistant general manager for player development and performance. Cardinals Cardinals president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, did meet with the media earlier today. Wanted to go through a lot of what he had to say, so let's jump right into it. Mo had a lot to say, and we're going to play a lot of audio for you here in this segment, so strap in, I guess. First and foremost, Mo made it very clear that they're very happy with the coaching staff decisions that they were able to make.
Always exciting day when we get to a point where we can announce our major league staff, so I thank all of you for your patience in that. You know, obviously, some of the decisions we made by adding our a new hitting coach was something that we felt after the season we had was something we had to do. Candidate pool there was pretty large breadth. Talked to a lot of different people, but ended up settling on Brent Brown, and really like the way he thinks about hitting, his philosophy, how he approaches it, and certainly think he'll be a valuable asset to our organization moving forward. And then also adding John Jay. Obviously, it was a hire that came highly recommended. Obviously, we've known him as a player. Relationships go back a long time, and we think he'll fit in great with our staff. And then, you know, taking somebody like Willie McGee and having him work as a special advisor, I think the pace of that will fit him well, and certainly love the fact that we can still have that connection to the organization.
So for John Jay, it's a return to the organization. He spent the last couple years working for Skip Schumacher in Miami, serving as the first base coach, working with outfielders, working with base running. And Mozeliak was asked about responsibilities and what Jay is going to do with his role on this coaching staff.
He'll be responsible for, obviously, outfield defense, but there'll be other aspects that he gets exposure to as well. One of the things that he found attractive to this job was not being stuck in a single lane. So he'll have exposure to a lot of different elements of the game.
Brent Brown is the name that Cardinals fans don't really know all that well. Brown this past year was with the Seattle Mariners, where he was their bench coach and offensive coordinator. However, pretty early on in the season, in his first year with the team, he got let go. Prior to that, had been the lead hitting coach for the Miami Marlins in 2023. So another guy who worked for Skip Schumacher. He also had previously worked as the Dodgers assistant hitting coach from 2020 to 2022. Has some time in the Texas Rangers organization as well. Mozeliak was asked about the first impressions he got from Brown.
I definitely think he brings a lot of energy. There's no doubt about it. That showed up in his interviews. But I feel like the way he thinks about hitting and how he approaches it is going to be a change from where we've been. And I think, you know, keeping with the change model, I think that's healthy for us. And so I do feel like how he goes about it from a strategic standpoint, I think will help our younger hitting coaches. And so I think he'll be a good mentor for them. But I also think he'll be a new voice for our hitters, and I think that's important.
So moving on from Turner Ward to Brent Brown, one of the questions was, what's Brown going to do differently?
When I say change, I think about, you know, where we once were with Jeff Albert, and then the shift we made with Turner Ward. I think this is someone that's a little bit more in between. So hopefully that balance of messaging will be something that we benefit from.
So many of these moves this offseason seem to be connected to player development. So when you hear about new individuals coming to the organization, you do kind of wonder how much they're connected to player development, even if they're going to be on the major league coaching staff. Mo did say that Brown is mainly going to work with the big league roster.
He'll be primarily focused on the major league hitters. I do feel like where we are at the minor league side, I think Russ Steinhorn and his team have done an amazing job, and feel pretty confident of where we are from a hitting side. That's not to say over the course of the next couple of years, you might see some changes there, but ultimately our confidence is pretty high with what we're seeing at the minor league level.
However, that big league roster, it is going to be filled with young players, and Brown's ability to work with younger players is key.
That was very important. Someone that can relate to younger players and speak their language. Number two, we also wanted somebody that had a larger breadth, if you will, in what they teach or how they teach. In other words, some players want as much information as possible, and they're trying to digest that, and it works for them. Other players want a very simplistic, simple strategy to take to the plate and in their game. And so I wanted, really, we're looking for a hitting coach that could do both and also do something in the middle if necessary. So the way he goes about his curriculum building can be very complicated or it can be very simplistic depending on what his hitter's looking for.
Mentioned earlier, and there's already been some social media pushback on his hiring because he was let go from the Mariners. Again, he had a weird role. He'd moved on from being the hitting coach with the Marlins, where he did a really good job, and he got the bench coach position, but then he was also had this offensive coordinator title, which isn't really a title you see in baseball very often, and he was doing like in-game analytics, and he was doing like emotional, mental stuff with Seattle. It was a lot. And Mozeliak is hopeful that the more defined role is going to be good for him. And they're really looking at what he did, especially in Miami and with the Dodgers, as opposed to his very short amount of time in Seattle.
Yeah, clearly a short runway for him there, right? But yeah. Not being on the inside, it'd be hard for me to have an opinion on exactly what happened. But I do think when you look at the success he had with the Marlins, the success he had with the Dodgers, perhaps getting back to a more defined and simplified role as a hitting coach might work best. But I do know when he had that different title and responsibilities, maybe that took away from a little bit of what he was best at.
So with all these moves, Willie McGee is no longer going to be a full-time member of the coaching staff. Again, he is going to serve in a role where he is going to be a special assistant to President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. And Mo was asked why the move for McGee.
Really, it's just to allow him more control of his own time. You know, Willie is a special person. Obviously, his connection to the Cardinals is something that's legendary and something we all respect. And I think that the travel, the demands of the day-to-day job, it's tough. And this will give him a lot more flexibility moving forward.
So what will that role look like for Willie moving forward?
He's going to have a lot of flexibility in what he does or doesn't do. But ultimately, I would imagine he's going to ping a few of our minor league cities from time to time and work with some of our prospects.
Mo also said that they are likely to hire an embedded analyst. So instead of having somebody who does all the analytics works from an office upstairs, and then, you know, there's a process to communicating with them, that there would be somebody basically with the major league team that's almost the conduit for that analytical information, which is something the Cardinals don't really have right now. He went on a little bit on what that's going to look like, that they hope to hire an embedded analyst.
It's really more of somebody that has, you know, more of a direct line to baseball dev than the dotted line approach. And therefore, but ultimately, this person would be a resource for the uniform staff.
All right, let's jump over to the front office side of things now. As Rob Serfolio, again, he is hired to serve as the assistant general manager for player development and performance. He comes over from Cleveland. He'd been in their organization since 2015, started as an intern and got to the director of player development. And Mo clearly is excited to be able to add Serfolio to the Cardinals organization.
You think back to our press conference 3 weeks ago, we talked about, you know, changes are happening, things will happen, and adding Rob Serfolio is one of those first moves, bringing in somebody that has experience from Cleveland, which I think is exciting to be able to tap into, but I also think he's really well-rounded. That too was a rather large candidate pool as well. But just thinking of his leadership, his communication skills, and his ability to, I think, bring people together is something that we found very, very attractive. And I would also note that he will be the one that runs the process to hire the new farm director, as well as the director of performance. One of the goals here is to definitely make sure that those two departments are not just running parallel, but are really collaborating together moving forward.
Mo explained what they liked about Serfolio.
What was attractive about Rob to us, it's really like his ability to connect with the different levels of responsibility that he's going to have. It takes a unique skill set to understand the different elements of what it's like to build a playing curriculum, but also a performance curriculum. And he understands both of these disciplines, and his ability to communicate and lead, I think, is very important.
And even beyond the excitement about Cerfolio as a guy, you look at the organization that he comes from and how impressive Cleveland has been, and there's some things that the Guardians have done that the Cardinals obviously would like to emulate.
Obviously, Rob's an impressive guy, but it's an impressive organization. I mean, what they're able to do with the dollars that they spend from a payroll standpoint and to really maximize development, drafting and development is something that we've always admired. So when you're looking at to try to bring in new leadership, you're certainly trying to identify people from successful organizations.
And the final thing from Mozeliak, he was asked about the payroll situation when they held their press conference a few weeks ago. Not much information was given about how much the Cardinals would reduce payroll, that payroll would go down, but they didn't really say by how much. He was asked if there was any update on that situation.
I think I have an understanding, but we are still working through some things because there's still some uncertainty on what some of our revenue flows may look like. So, you know, hopefully as we get into the off season officially after the World Series, we'll have a little more clarity on that. But, you know, ultimately the direction we're going is it's going to be creating a lot of opportunity for some of our younger players.
And to me, you know, we've talked a lot about this on this show. Like, was the payroll reduction going to be more of just a case of Paul Goldschmidt going away, Lance Lynn going away, Kyle Gibson going away, or is there going to be more shedding of payroll with players like Nolan Arenado or Wilson Contreras or Sonny Gray getting moved? I listened to what Mo said right there, and again, he didn't overtly state anything, but I am more of the belief now that the shedding of payroll might be more extreme than that first option of just some of those players going away, that there might be some contracts that they're going to be looking to move as well. All right, we will take a break, and when we return, we will switch gears. We'll talk some football. In fact, we're going to hear from Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. That's up in just a moment. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Welcome back in. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It is time for our weekly conversation with Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes, courtesy of our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. This past weekend, the Chiefs, they win again. They stay undefeated as they pick up the victory in San Francisco, winning 28-18. And now they're going to match up against the Raiders this upcoming weekend. They won on Sunday, despite the fact that Patrick Mahomes didn't really have a very good game. He only threw for 154 yards, no touchdowns, and two interceptions. Mahomes joins our colleague in Kansas City, Carrington Harrison, on a weekly basis as they opened up the conversation. Interesting first question. Maybe you saw this during the summertime and during training camp time. There was a video that went viral where the Raiders had a Kermit the Frog doll, and at times Patrick Mahomes has been accused of sounding kind of like Kermit. The Raiders had a Kermit the Frog doll that they put a Mahomes jersey on and said some not so nice things, as you might expect. So give credit to my man, Carrington Harrison. First question he asked Mahomes this week was when he saw that video for the first time.
I think I just saw it after I finished practice or something in training camp. It was one of those training camp long days, and it came across my timeline on Twitter. But that was the first time I saw it.
I'm going to guess that you get a lot of texts on a day-to-day basis. Is this one of the days where you just got the highest volume of number of texts of people sending this to you?
Not necessarily, honestly. Not a lot of people send it to me. I think everybody knows how I am, and they didn't want to bring that to my attention. They wanted me to focus on what I needed to focus on that day.
What do you do with this information? Are you just keeping this in the back of your mind for when you play this team again? Is it just water that rolls off your back? Like, what do you do when there is this level of disrespect from a team that you eventually have to play?
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, like, if you're not excited to play this game this week, especially how they beat us last time, then you're not in the right sport. So it's not like it takes it over the top or does anything like that. I think I'm just focused on playing a team that really got after us the last time we played them.
How crazy is it that that was your last loss and that was on Christmas and we are coming up on Halloween and you guys have not lost a game since?
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to the guys on our team. I mean, obviously, that was a tough day on Christmas, but guys bounced back. We were able to go on a run and win the Super Bowl, and the guys have carried that momentum into this season.
What do you think clicked for this team at that point? I mean, you guys were 500 the last 8 weeks of the season, and something changed within your team that has obviously led you to have the current longest winning streak in the National Football League. Did you notice a change, a difference with your team after that loss?
I think it's just more than anything. I think guys just knew that our backs were up against the wall, and we had to win at that point of last year. And so guys stepped up and played well, and especially on our defense, they took it up to even another notch, and they were already playing. And I think that it showed that guys that we were just going to find ways to get wins, and we carried that into this year, where it's not always been pretty as the games could be, but we're finding ways to win every single football game, and I think that's important as you go along a long season.
Right now, we're talking to the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. Patrick, what does it say about your team that you are winning in the face of all of these injuries? I don't need to tell you, but you guys don't have Isaiah Pacheco. You don't have Rashee Rice. You don't have Hollywood Brown. Juju goes out with an injury. Jalen Watson's a key piece of your defense. And you guys still are the lone undefeated team in the league.
Yeah, it just speaks to the way the guys compete. I mean, obviously, that's losing a lot of guys that are impact players on our team, but the guys that are behind them are preparing themselves and being ready to go when their numbers are called. And the hope is that we continue to get a little bit more healthy. But as we've dealt with these injuries, it's gotten a lot of experience for younger guys, and they've stepped up whenever their numbers is called and made plays.
In that same vein, what does it say about your team that you guys have gone against the Brock Purdy version of the San Francisco 49ers three separate times, and they've been three different games? You guys won 44-23 there a couple of years ago. Obviously, you guys put those two drives together to win in the Super Bowl and the win that you guys had on Sunday. You guys have shown a versatility against San Francisco that if it has to be a ground-and-pound game where you guys run it 40 times, you can. Or if you guys need to score almost 50, you can do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's it speaks to the team. I mean, it speaks to the coaches, Coach Reed, and doing whatever it takes to win. I think in order to be a championship-caliber team, you have to play different types of football games, and you have to win different ways based on that week's matchup. And this last week, it was about controlling the ball, letting our defense go work, and then trying to execute in the red zone. We were able to do that.
Right now, we're talking to Patrick Mahomes here for a couple more minutes. Patrick, I'll start broad and we'll narrow it in. Take us through your touchdown run, because it kind of felt like you called your own number, or it was a design kind of quarterback draw play.
Not necessarily a quarterback draw. They gave us the man coverage. The plan was to get the ball to Trav, and then Xavier coming across the field. And obviously, Trav was getting held pretty tough there. And when I motioned the guy out, I saw the middle of the field was kind of open. So I knew if the guys weren't there, I could make a quick decision if it opened up to run in the end zone. And obviously, with Trav getting held and it opened it up, I just made the decision to get in the end zone, and I was able to do that.
I don't know if you've seen the meme or not. I don't know if it's a meme or per se, but it's like you with your shirt off and then the guy that tried to tackle you with his shirt off. The internet gives you a lot of grief about the dad bod, but all of that weight came in handy for that moment.
Yeah, no doubt, because, I mean, I wasn't necessarily trying to run over the guy. I was just trying to get in the end zone, and he was coming up fast, and I'd seen how he hit some other guys early in the game. So I was more bracing to take the hit as I got in the end zone, but the dad bod helped me out there. I got set after the game. I have a little weight. And I was able to hold my ground and then get in the end zone.
Today is the start of the NBA season. I don't know if you've ever dunked on somebody before. I'm just guessing that you have. I'm guessing, like, that's the closest NFL feeling that you will ever have to, like, dunking on somebody.
Yeah, I've dunked on someone one time, and I got called for a charge. So it definitely was a cool feeling. I think more than anything, it's just fourth and goal. Big moment in the game. I mean, it's still a two-point game at that moment, and able to get that touchdown and then get the momentum back in our favor. So it was definitely a big moment that we've seen that we've made those plays as this year's went on, and we're going to try to continue to do that.
Patrick, you got to tell us a story about you dunked on somebody. I'm guessing this was in high school at some point.
Yeah, no, I was a senior in high school, and I caught a fast break, and I lifted up, and I remember lifting up thinking I was going to get fouled, and the guy went for a charge instead of for a block, and it kind of boosted me up a little bit. I'm sure it's on the internet somewhere, and I was able to I was able to get the dunk, man. But they did call a charge, even though I think the guy was still moving.
All right, I got to find this video. I've never seen this before. We're talking to Patrick Mahomes for a couple of minutes. I do want to get your opinion on this because we talk about, you know, some of the cool things that you've been able to do in your career. How is it going from a kid who watched Tom Brady play in Super Bowls to you have played in a Super Bowl against Tom Brady, and now you were sitting across from him being interviewed and you guys are having a conversation about your life and career?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's extremely cool. I mean, like you said, I watched him growing up and him winning tons of Super Bowls and winning MVPs and all these different things and then playing against him and having a ton of respect for him. And then after, as the end of his career kind of came to, and then and to this next stage of his career, we kind of stayed in touch and talked. And it was really cool to sit down and do an interview because even when we talk and I listen to him talk about things, and I mean, not all of it's in the interview, he says stuff that I can't really talk to other people about, and I can tell he understands exactly where I'm coming from and some little things and nuances of the quarterback position. And there's only a couple guys on that walk around on this earth that understand some of the things that he's talking about and that I try to explain to people, and it's good to kind of get that insight from guys like that.
I was just going to ask you that because obviously there's competition there. You guys have competed against one another, but what is it like to have someone like that who has that level of admiration for you as well?
Yeah, I think it speaks to the way I play the game of football. It's not about the stats. It's not about the accolades. It's about going out there and winning, and that's how he played. I mean, obviously, he's got every stat, and he's got every MVP and all that different type of stuff, but for him, at the end of the day, it was about how he could get his team in position to win. And so I think there's a mutual respect. Obviously, there's respect for me there, but I think he has a respect for me just because I play that game that way. And like you said, it's always competition, and it's something that I can chase in my career, but I have a ton of respect regardless because the way he played the game every single day and the way he was the teammate that he was and the player that he was.
There's a couple of players on your offense I want to ask you about. Let's start with Mecole Hardman. What is it about San Francisco that turns Mecole Hardman into some super Saiyan individual? I mean, the last three times that you guys have played San Francisco, he had two touchdowns a couple of years ago. He catches the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, and he had a big punt return and a touchdown in this one. He always plays well against them.
Yeah, I mean, he just steps up, man. It's about playing the best, and whenever you play the best, guys have to step up and play their best, and McColl's done that in all those matchups, and he's executing whenever his number's called. He's finding ways to get down the field on jet sweeps, or he's blocking or doing whatever it takes to win, and that's what you want in guys that are winners. And so whenever we play the best competition, it seems like he plays his best football, and that's what you want out of guys.
You and I talked about this whenever Kareem first got here. I looked this stat up yesterday. He has touched the ball on a third of you guys' offensive possessions since he's gotten here. He has turned into a really critical and vital part of what you were doing offensively. You were really confident in the move and really confident in his production. What is it like to see his hard work paying off and him having so much success?
Yeah, I mean, it's really fun to see because you see the work that he's putting in throughout the week to prepare himself to be ready to go out there and carry the football that many times and catch the ball and everything like that. And so it's fun to watch. I mean, he really is putting the work in, and it's like everything else, man. It's fun to watch whenever guys come in, their number gets called, and they put in the hard work, and then they go out there and execute and have success. And so it's something that we'll continue to build on as we start getting guys back. Maybe we can take some of the carries off of him so he's not getting 20 to 30 carries a week. But whatever it takes to win, he's willing to do it.
Patrick, last thing here. I'm sure you have heard all the kind of swirlings around. Chiefs are linked to this receiver. Chiefs are linked to this receiver. What kind of input do you have in moves that could potentially happen over the next couple of weeks? What communication do you have with the front office about something that could happen?
Yeah, I mean, they keep me in the loop on stuff that they're looking at. But I don't have a ton of input, man. I know that regardless, they're going to put guys on the field that can win football games, and that's what we have right now. And if they want to add guys, they can add guys. But at the end of the day, I believe in the guys that we have in the building, and I think that we can win a lot of football games with them.
That is the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, joining us on the show today as they get ready to travel to the site of where they won their last Super Bowl in Las Vegas. Patrick, great talking to you today, my man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you.
Patrick Mahomes talking with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City, and talking with Carrington Harrison. Again, the Chiefs, they are back at it coming up on Sunday as they are going to match up against the Raiders. That'll be a 3:25 kickoff, and you can hear it right here on St. Louis's home for Chiefs football, KMOX. One more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to put the finishing touches on this edition of a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We have spent a lot of time talking today about the announcements that the Cardinals made. Again, they have a new assistant general manager for player development and performance, and Rob Serfolio, who comes over from the Cleveland Guardians. They are going to continue to beef up the front office. There are more hires to be made. John Jay rejoining the organization. He's going to be on the Major League coaching staff. Brant Brown is the new Major League hitting coach. They are going to add to the Major League coaching staff as well. Willie McGee is staying in the organization, but will no longer be on the Major League coaching everyday staff, as he instead is going to serve as a special assistant to President of Baseball Operations, John Mozeliak. Would love to point you in the direction of a special emergency KMOX Sports Roundtable we did this afternoon on social media. It was myself along with Kevin Wheeler and Bernie Miklas. We, for about 40 minutes, broke down every aspect of this. We talked through the Serfolio hire, the Jay hire, the Brown hire, and the McGee transition. And if you want to see that, you can head to any of the KMOX Sports social media channels and find that. So Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, wherever it might be, just find KMOX Sports. There is a difference, by the way, between KMOX Sports and KMOX News on most of our social media channels. So make sure, especially like on Facebook, if you go watch it there, it is on KMOX Sports. You can also find the audio-only version of that via the Cardinals Conversations podcast. If it's not posted quite yet, it will be very shortly, so you can check that out for yourself. But always a lot of fun to be able to get together. We've been doing those on Mondays on a weekly basis, but this week we did one yesterday on Monday, but we also did an emergency one today. As soon as that information was officially announced, the three of us got together. Tom Ackerman made the trip to Columbia today for the Mizzou football weekly press conference with Coach Drinkwitz. So he was not with us for it. He normally is. But the three of us did our best without Tom being there. And I would encourage you to either go listen to that or watch it if you want more information and more context and thoughts on everything with these announcements that were made today. All right, that's just about going to do it for the program today. On the way next, at your service, my guy Greg Damon is going to be in the house as we'll hear from him for the next couple hours as he'll take you until 10 o'clock this evening. And I'll be back with you tomorrow, 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, for another Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.